Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I'm your host, Lisa Zimmer, and today we have Jeff Brown, author of Soul Shaping, the original creator of The Apology to the Divine Feminine, The Apology to the Sacred Masculine, and the inspirational writing for Good Morning America, now has a new school of thought with Soul Shaping University. Jeff Brown, thank you for joining us on Unlimited Realities today.
My pleasure, Lisa. Happy to be with you again.
It's always great to have you on.
Yeah.
It's a great little fun show, and I hear we're going to have Vinny Brownerini on as well. Is that right?
He's around. He's had a hard night. He's fallen back into his old patterns, but he says he's willing to chat with you. Yeah.
He's willing to chat with me. Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah.
That should be
a
lot of fun with the Vin.
Never know.
Talk to us. Well, I don't know. It could be fun, couldn't it?
Could be fun. Oh, it could be.
Let's talk about this new Soul Shaping University you have going on here. You have an online course that is to really help evolve people to find their divine purpose and sacred truth. Sounds like a wonderful program. I'm so happy for you to have this going on.
You know, I'd always wanted to have one, and of course, I always imagined I'd need $15 million, buy some land in Virginia. I mean, like, this was my imagining, and start like a soul shaping university. You know, where there'd be various people teaching various things about excavating true path, honoring true path, clearing the emotional debris. So many things in the book from the Soul Shaping Dictionary that can be incorporated as courses, but I never imagined that it would be a lot simpler than that. All I had to do was start one online. So. The first course begins on June 26th. It's almost filled up. It's a sacred purpose course, just helping people to excavate and honor and work with purpose and understand life through a purposeful lens and figure out ways to integrate that quest and that honoring in the heart of, you know, economic life and practical considerations. I want to be really solidly realistic about this in the way that I teach it. And I'm in the process of putting together a Soul Shaping University website to take everything to the next level over the course of the next number of months. It's exciting. It feels really like the right step, you know, because I think on radio that's really what we're doing, is just kind of helping to remind people of path, and it just makes a lot of sense to put it into a more formal structure. Yeah.
Right. And all of that info is on your Soul Shaping website. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. It's on soulshaping.com, and they can find the link to that first course on the right. And I'm going to add another course in the next day or two, same course, but an autumn course for people who don't want to go to summer school. You know, summer school brings up a lot of stuff for people. So starting in September is kind of exciting and fresh, and autumn, and summer's over.
That's right, and it's the process of new learning for the fall, you know. Summer school is for those who aren't affected by the old summer school.
Yeah, right. Those who can understand new paradigm. I mean, because really what it is, you know, I've always wanted to have when I went through my process, really, my hardcore years of it, my late 20s, 30s, even I guess early 40s, I really felt as though the things that were actually important to my reality, I never learned them anywhere in university. You know, I mean, we kind of all know this already, but, you know, I learned to stretch my mind, and I learned concepts, and I learned, you know, supported myself in ways of thinking. But really, in terms of like this fundamental quest, which is like, who was I really, I didn't learn it there. We didn't inquire into that there. You know, it was history instead of karmic history. It was geography instead of inner geography. So the idea of crafting an educational environment in a really solid and true way that starts to deal with the questions that actually matter to our authenticity, it feels exciting to me. It feels real exciting.
It's very exciting. It's a great concept. Yeah. It's something that I really think that once it's the fact that it's out there, you're going to have a lot of people seeking it out, because it's something that's long overdue. It's a great idea. Genius, in fact. Now, what we were going to talk about in regard to your latest writing also is The Apology to the Sacred Masculine.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the second in your series of apologies, the first being The Apology to the Divine Feminine. and then you follow that up with the apology to the divine, the sacred masculine. I really liked your apology to the sacred masculine. I loved the divine feminine, but for some reason, and I'm not completely sure why, the apology to the sacred masculine really was very core for me. What do you feel is, you know, honestly, it's a great reflective piece in regard to what we as women do unconsciously in regard to relationships, sometimes consciously, but mostly on an unconscious level, and generally, you know, from a learned projection. So it's something that's, you know, I've seen it carried down through generations of mothers handing it off to their daughters and how to respond and react. Is that kind of where you were writing this piece from, to kind of, you know, the first piece with the divine feminine was kind of educating women on men. Is this a little bit of a piece of educating men on women?
No. Yeah, I mean, I had trouble with this piece. You know, the feminine just came right out of me. You know, this piece took a lot of work, and I think part of it is because I don't feel particularly angry at women.
Okay.
You know, I mean, I had that mother trip. I had all that stuff, and absolutely, if you stick me in the car with my mother for more than 10 minutes, I can feel some of the old stuff. But in my moment to moment existence, I really hold women in really high regard and see them through a very different lens. So trying to, you know, and I've had really good luck with them. Like if anything, I've been the problem, you know, and there were obviously some problems in the other direction, but quite often, you know, I often had very wonderful girlfriends. And so really it was a little bit challenging to really clarify for myself some of the stuff that was problematic. And so really for me, I mean, part of this, the writing of it, was for me to just get real clear on some of the historical experiences, maybe some that were unresolved for me in terms of the behavior of women towards me. And but ultimately, I feel like this piece, your reaction to it is a little different than my reaction to it. I really felt like it was much more, the latter part of it was more my focus, which was trying to craft a vision of possibility. And for sure trying to humanize the whole thing, and to bring it back into balance, because this whole trip, this whole feminist trip of men, blame man, and seeing this as a one-sided paradigm, that really didn't work for me. Because we're in it together, we've always been in it together, and I think we have to understand each other and ourselves in that way. But I'm interested in for you, what came up for you in this piece versus the other one?
Ooh, turning the table, are you? Well,
absolutely. Well, I'm the co-interviewer. Isn't that what, co-host?
Where's Vinny? Where's Vinny? Bring Vinny on.
Vinny, no. Vinny'll have at you soon, but I. He's getting a cannoli, actually.
Well, actually, I really felt like it was. I felt like you were a little too, you know, generous with the female population myself.
Yeah,
I mean, my approach to it was completely different in regard to, you know, I've worked with women for almost 30 years, and I see where women go when it comes to relationships and how they put up their own sabotage. And for me, it was almost like I wanted to kind of, being a woman, and I'm really good at that, I wanted to kind of address that with women in regard to, you know, get out of your pretense and be real and be honest. And, of course, that comes from the heart, but that's not always easy, and that's not, you know, an easy spot to come from in regard to relationships for a lot of women, because they want to make sure that they're protected. So there's that self-preservation piece that comes in, and often comes in that can be sabotaging in relationships, because how they act or how they react is not understood. And so I really thought you were very generous and very kind to women compared to how I have seen women manipulate and corrupt relationships. And oftentimes it's not something that's a conscious act. A lot of times it's something that they've been doing for decades, and it's just something that they do on a reactionary level. So for that, that's what I got out of it. And I thought that it was really a great piece for healing the gender aspect of where we kind of go astray. But it was also something that really touched me in a way of it was very freeing, almost like taking all, you know, kind of being naked and feeling really good with that and not really, you know, having a care about how the vulnerability was being seen or viewed. So it was kind of freeing for me. Does that make sense?
It totally does. You know, you sent me a sort of an apology that you wrote, and it was quite a bit harsher towards women than mine was. I've had a number sent to me, and I find it fascinating that women are so much harder on each other than I was in this apology. You know, I mean, part of it for me is that because I'm really doing so much of this work around sacred purpose, you know, I really tend to see humanity in a way that's almost beyond gender. I mean, it includes gender, but it's also more about how does the soul get activated? How does the soul find its path? How does this? So in a way, you know, the whole gender and, like, you know, this pattern and that pattern, there's a part of me that's not really there for that as a matter of interpretation. You know, not that it isn't real, but I come back to the soul's journey, and I also come back to the belief, the fundamental belief, that all of these little patterns are part of some sociological fabric, you know,
right,
that we're coming from some place in this reality where men occupied one way of being as armored warriors, women occupied another. The polarities were too extreme, they were perverse, and as a result, all this madness happened, and now we just got to come into balance and stop living in those very linear and limited archetypal frameworks. So that's what it is for me, is now trying to craft and imagine in my next writing in gender, what is the vision for the next step? You know, how do we get to the next place? And I think it's important to acknowledge where we've been and to try to contextualize it. So, like, we name your pattern, let's say, as female, but we also try on a deeper level to understand that you were actually doing your best and where all that came from. And because otherwise we just end up in the blame trap again. And maybe we need to be there for a while longer, of course. But that, I feel like the feminist stuff, it helped for a while, but then at some point it kind of derailed the train, right? Because
right,
we weren't contextualizing gender experience. Where does it come from? Why does a guy act like that? Why does he go into the cave? I mean, we know he goes in the cave now. John Gray told us he goes in the cave. He goes in the cave. So now what? Why did he go in the cave? How do we make you look at him and go, you know what? Now I get why you go in the cave. You know, I see how it's connected to the human lineage. And then that softens the edges and we can start to move forward, you know?
Right. And not taking it personally. You know, I think that when you step outside of yourself and you can look at it as, you know, this is something that there's more of an internal processing. It's not a projected attack. It's not something that's, it's against you, per se. So,
exactly.
I really... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, because what happened, I think we're working so hard now to try to not judge one another, that we're getting away from living in reality. We don't want to arbitrarily judge or be capricious or malicious, anything like that, but we do need to understand differences in order to understand each other. You know, certain cultures do behave in certain ways because of their lineage. It needs to be understood because of their history. Certain genders, but gender behaves in certain ways because of its history. And so that we want to kind of hold compassion, but at the same time be grounded and sensible and understanding where things are sourced, you know. And so it's like, you know, so we sit down at the table and I'm in my pattern and you're in your pattern. And so we go, oh, you know, we can finally name our patterns. Well, this is my pattern. This is your pattern. But then what do we do at that table so that you can understand where that pattern came from? And I think it's about talking about sociological realities.
Right.
Taking it a little bit out of the psychological and trying to understand what is the context for this behavior, you know?
Yeah. Because oftentimes, you know, it's something that's not looked at on a conscious level. It's just a reactionary place that we go to.
Yeah, it's
and,
just primal.
You know, yeah, it's very, and oftentimes when you start to bring into that piece of, well, why do you do that, then that light bulb, you know, starts to go off and you start to think about, okay, wow, really this doesn't resonate with who I am and this isn't how I would want to respond or this isn't how I would react normally.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you really in the apologies to the sacred masculine, you said that it was difficult for you. It really does flow as beautifully as the first one, which was the apologies to the divine feminine. But you have in here, you know, you're very, I know that you don't have the female issues, but I think when you were saying how women were harder on women, I think that goes with within our gender. As women, we've watched women, and we get disgusted with women's bullshit. And, you know, as a woman, I, you know, see women who can play the part. And honestly, we as women can look at it and say, oh, she's playing a part. But many men are still, you know, kind of in a fog in regard to it. They're not even aware that there's an illusion going on. So,
yeah, absolutely true.
You know, there's that piece. And so I think that as women, you know, just like men, if as a man, I'm sure you stand and see men playing their role and their part, and you're saying, you know, oh, that, you know, what a game. You know, it's the same thing as knowing your own gender really well. You know where they, you know, the edges kind of, you know, blend.
Yeah.
And so, you know,
we're
in
blind.
Regard to...
We're blind.
We're all blind.
Well,
you know,
cross-gender blindness. I mean, there might be some truth to that. I don't see what you're talking about. I mean, there's some obvious examples of it, but in the more subtle places, when I look at women, I see the heart, and I see a mm-hmm. capacity for an open heart that I don't see in many men. And I don't really see the scam or the manipulation or the trickery or the, I just might be radically naive about it. But with my brothers, I see every move they're making, you know.
Right,
it's true.
Right.
It's the most obvious thing in the world,
And see, that's...
But this is part
I
of the problem. We don't get each other. I mean, this is exactly part of the problem. If that's true, what you're saying about the way women operate sometimes, and if I absolutely don't see that, then we don't get each other. I mean, this is why so much work has to happen to craft a bridge, so that we can actually see one another in human terms, not just in these gender, traditional embedded conditioned patterns.
And it's not all women, and it's not all men. It's the old, you know, way of thinking, or the lack of a way of really expanding the thought or the consciousness to really go beyond the old patterns or the old projections. So I'm not saying this as a blanket statement that all women are manipulative. I am saying as a statement that I have witnessed women be very manipulative in personal relationships. And they do it on an unconscious level of self-preservation. And they do it on a level of fear of being hurt. And so on that context, yes, I have great compassion for it, but it's also played out in different ways. Like you're saying, you can see your brothers a mile away when they're, you know, acting out their stuff. Well, I think it's interesting because in regard to men, I have compassion for the male species as well as the female, but I can see the men in regard to not knowing where their you know, safety lies. And I do think that feminism came in and kind of squashed that for them for generations because they didn't know where it was safe to express. They didn't know if they had to be the he-man or the compassionate, sensitive one. And often, you know, women say they want the compassionate, sensitive one, and yet run from it as soon as it's shown to them. So there's a whole lot of identifying what it is we really want, and there's a whole lot of really getting to the core of compassion and acceptance, because all of us are growing and changing, and some of us have some things together, and some of us don't have other things together. So it's kind of like a hodgepodge of growth, you know? It's like that compassion's necessary all the way across the board.
Yeah, it's so interesting. The thing that I plucked out of what you just said that felt perfectly significant was you called it the male species. but that's, oops. Which of course, but it's perfect because that's probably in a way how it feels, right? Like we're two separate species rather than...
Two separate, well, sometimes, you know, and...
No,
and
oftentimes, yeah.
But do you feel like it's the, you know, the core of this really comes down to safety and communication? Because I believe that if we could just drop the supposeds and really come from a heart of communication, that if there was a safety net there where you just felt like you could say what you needed to say and there would be no judgment, wouldn't that be a real healer for both genders? Because it really comes down to effective communication and respect. And I think that's where that missing link, that piece comes from. It's based on assumptions, or it's based on projections, or it's based on, you know, past taught stuff.
Well, I think for that to happen, the heart has to open. You know, I think that
right.
The communication has to come from an open heart. And I think the struggle at this, I mean, I think, you know, this example of how women want the vulnerable man, but at the same time want the masculine guy, mm-hmm. you know, the warrior man, the productive man, the effective in the marketplace man, who sometimes isn't so vulnerable in doing that. And just if you think about just trying to, the confusion around trying to, I mean, I really empathize with this, trying to straddle that line to try to hold those two at one time. And so mm-hmm. few men are able to hold those in themselves. So that becomes the part of the problem. But also
sure.
it's some unresolved, it's almost like there's the survivalist path, which wants the strong warrior protector. And then there's the more authentic movement in the culture and in gender towards wanting somebody who's coming from the heart and actually can connect, see somebody, attune, conscious relationship, all that stuff. We're straddling the line because we really are, as a culture, straddling the line. I mean, this is a sociological
right.
fact. We got one foot in both places, and I think that's a big, big, big part of the problem. So we're confused, and if we can just talk from confusion, like say I'm really confused. I want a really tough, solid, egoic guy, and yet I want a real softy. You know, a softy toffee, and it's like I don't know how to find that, and I don't know if that exists, and is it even possible for men to live in those two places? And maybe at this stage of cultural development, it really isn't that easy to hold that for men. And, you know, like get really into the soup of what really it is to be human at this stage in humanity and move from that place. I mean, one of the things that I did want to do in this apology, and I hope that I did do a little bit, was to be able to just kind of help. You know, it's like in the feminist movement, so much happened, or, you know, and there was so much man bashing, and there were so many good men who were waking up every morning, never questioning that they had to take care of their people, going to work, doing a job they hated, having heart attacks and dying early, you know, completely trapped in the egoic marketplace, never strayed from that, never cheated on their wives, never beat up their kids. So many men like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They did their duty, and they were honoring and all that. And I felt as though those guys really got thrown away. Everybody got swept into this kind of dark, malevolent framework of perception about men. And it felt like, you know, I thought about my grandfather, who was certainly not perfect, but who did his best every day, you know,
mm-hmm.
and really, really got a lot of attitude just for being a man, for having a penis. I mean, basically, that's exactly what happened. And, you know, and it's like, how do we bring an awareness and an honoring and a gratitude towards the men who fought on those battlefields and died young, the men who, you know, built the railroads, the men who helped to struggle in the physical world to craft structures and foundations for us to move higher from. And, you know, if that was one of the things most important to me in the apology, to try to bring that back into alignment. Yeah.
Right. And with saying that, you have, you know, you have Vinny on the back burner, who's got an evolving approach to both the apologies. But you also have, you know, you've hit on something here in the apology to the sacred masculine that I think, you know, like you said, it really is genderless, because we all have our stuff, whether we're women or we're men, and in looking at how we react individually on that self-preservation thing is our insight into what needs to be tweaked. But, you know, you also really talk about, in regard to the men, that there is a compassion that comes out of men, that they are starting to emerge with, they're starting to grow from, they're starting to express, and there's not there's not really a defined safety net for them, so to speak. It's a matter of kind of like a jump and fall or a risk that they're just going to have to express and feel comfortable with that. But there's not a lot of support for that. I mean, I don't see, even though women want a sensitive man, I don't see that they're kind of supporting that all the way either.
There's not a lot of places for us to go with each other either as men. I mean, women, you know, Amazing Women's Hub and Amazing Women's Day, and there's like so much movement happening, and we're not forming in that way, my brothers, as
right.
empowered, heartfelt men, you know. You know, I have a little fan page, Heartfelt Men's Hub, that I start on Facebook, and unless I stoke it and get involved all the time, it doesn't move at all. I mean, it really isn't. And then you go on, you know, the Awesome Women's Hub, and there's just so much activity, you know. And really, that's part of the problem, is that we are not bonding with one another with respect to these issues.
And is it a comfort level? Because for, you know, so long it's been the alpha male had the power, and now we're trying to open up the heart, and it's uncomfortable. I mean, it's not a comfortable space
yep.
to go in, you know.
Yep.
It's not,
yep.
and it's scary. I mean, it's not... You take a typical man and you say, okay, now express your heart. Where does he start? You know?
Yeah. He don't start with the heart. I mean, you know, there's two things for me about that. First is we don't know anything. A lot of us men don't know anything about that terrain. Our consciousness is fundamentally hypervigilant. We are conditioned, and this comes through the archetypes. We are conditioned male warrior protectors. Even men that don't appear to have that manifestation are having that somewhere inside of their bones. I've met very few men who aren't carrying some of that. And so part of the problem is we don't know the terrain. You know, focused warrior, protector really needs tangibility, and the mixed upness, the inherent confusion of the heart path does not work with our role on the planet. It's very simple for me. It's like, you want me to go somewhere that's dangerous because I'm not going to be able to occupy the space for the reality that I'm here to occupy. I'm supposed to be something else. And I don't want to be in mushy feelings because I'm not going to keep my eye on the prize. I'm not going to be competitive in the marketplace when I'm in that hard place. I'm not going to be able to deal with the other baboons. The other baboons are going to sense my weakness, and then they're going to respond in kind to that. And so that's part of a big part of the problem. And I think the other problem is sociologically, we're not ready as a planet to step out of survivalism as our fundamental organizing principle. We're moving towards it. There are signs. But fundamentally, we're not there yet. Men are still smart enough, and it's almost like on a primal animalistic level, to know that they got to hold the space for the warrior reality. I mean, you know, 9/11 happened in North America just yesterday in historical terms. You know,
right.
Things are very close to the door. It's not like we've entered into this place where this planet is blissful and entirely
right.
safe for everybody. It's simply not true. Men will not lay down their arms until they know with certainty that it's safe to. And when they know that it's safe to, then they'll open their hearts. Now, the irony and challenge of it is, until they open their hearts, they're going to keep making the kind of trouble that creates an unsafe world. And that's where the problem lies. How do we get there?
And isn't there also a going back and forth? I mean, it's very difficult to hold both dynamics at once, both being an open heart and a courageous
yeah.
warrior. And yet both aspects are necessary. You know, there's a part that's a great benefit in being the strong warrior, in being the protector, in being that masculine, you know, Vinny, you know. So then you've got the soft heart, emotional, you know, open feeling Jeff. And because even as women, we flip-flop back and forth in our masculine and feminine. I mean, it's, you know, if we have to be strong, we're strong in the moment. If, you know, but naturally our natural makeup is a feminine, unless, you know, we're so, you know, engrossed in our masculinity. But I would think that it's very difficult for a man to hold both places at once.
Often impossible. I mean, I think the place to start is maybe we don't got to go that far. You know, let's start where we are. And so we're not going to jump to wildly mushy, open-hearted, a lot of us. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
We don't got the map, you know. This is going to happen over generations. But where we could start is taking that warrior and just making sure on a moment-to-moment level that he's acting from benevolence in his intentions. To me, this is the place to start. So that, and that's a step ahead of where we are. So when you're going to go into the marketplace and start a business and do your thing, you make sure that you're coming from a good place. You're not going to destroy another human being to make the money. You're doing it because you have a goal that's sort of soul-centered or that makes the world a more conscious reality, something like that. You know, so, or if you're in an aggressive state of mind, you, instead of moving that out towards people in your physical environment, you get a foam cube or a mattress and you hit that. So in other words, you're more benevolent in exercising the warrior muscle. And I think once we practice that for enough so that we become the good man warrior, then we'll start to move more closely in the direction of being aligned with a more open-hearted way of being. And that feels realistic to me. It's like, dude, just think about why are you doing this and are you doing it for good reasons? Start there. That feels
real. And that seems like a very safe step for, you know, any human to take in regard to, you know, even women in regard to their reactionary mode. You know, if they can step back and look at what is the truth of what they're projecting or what they're doing, and step back and evaluate, because it really does come from, you know, a place of self-preservation and fear, and that is something that definitely opens up my compassion and empathy for the human soul. You know, it's a scary place out there, and it's not easy to be vulnerable. It's not easy to express whether you're man or woman.
Right. And I think if we come back to this question, I have this always in my mind now, which is where, you know, I ask myself this too, as my work moves out into the world and I have various opportunities, I keep asking myself this question, you know, where am I moving from? Not where am I moving to, but where am I moving from, you know? And if the source spring is clean and well-intended, then I think that your impact on humanity will change in a more positive direction, you know?
Right.
But listen, why don't we get Vinny on, because I'm sure Vinny has many views on these.
Oh, Vinny. Subjects.
Are you ready?
Miss
He's coming
Vinny.
Downstairs. You ready?
I'm so ready for Vin.
He just had his, what, third cannoli? Third cannoli of the morning, just what he doesn't need. Are you ready for him?
Well, he can play tennis and work it off.
Hold on a sec. Hello, Lisa.
Vin, I've Lisa. Missed you. How
yeah.
you doing?
I had a rough night. I'm good, but I've fallen off the wagon on my process, I suppose you'd say.
Fallen off the wagon? How, then? What happened?
You know, I don't know. I met a dame, and I was trying doing all the things Jeff says, being conscious and soul gazing and all that in my therapy, but it was boring. You know, we lost the sex charge, you know, in that bliss stuff all the time. It was like, okay, we're blissed out. It feels really good. Now what? You know, so I don't know. I don't know how to unite, I guess, the bliss trip with the sex thing. So I picked a fight, basically. I just picked a fight. I said, told her I didn't like her shoes and different things, and then we had a big brawl in the house, and things were said, but then we had good sex, you know. So I could find the whole thing confusing. This conscious path, it needs to have I don't know, more juice to it. Do you know what I'm talking about?
It needs to have more juice to it, but, you know, I think the juice is there. It's just a matter of opening up to it. So,
well,
I mean,
yeah,
maybe,
but
it,
I'm a man.
Maybe you reached, but maybe you reached your limit for that point, and you needed to kind of, like, you know, reevaluate, perhaps. You know, there's a reason
it's like I'm moving in the direction of becoming another kind of being. But I'm still living in a man's body. You know, that's what I think. He's taking me towards, like, becoming like a chick, you know, like in my feelings. I'm blubbering all the time when I'm driving back from jobs. And sometimes I just want to be a man, you know, and honor that and you know, So I'm finding it very confusing to be a man and yet at the same time to be something that Jeff annoyingly refers to as conscious. What does that mean?
I think that you are conscious. You're conscious that you're going through these shifts, so that's the first step. And
yeah.
I think maybe you're being a little bit harder on yourself than you need to because you're going to have these little blips back and forth. It's part of the process, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, the worst thing you can do is beat yourself up, Ben.
You know, I know. I'm hard on myself. It's an old story in the family. But I was doing a lot of, like, purging, you know, or Jeff says, go shuck yourself. So I was trying to peel away the layers. And after a while, I started to find it, like I wasn't myself anymore. You know, so it makes me wonder, from a gender sense, what is gender? You know, I mean, are we moving in the direction of like nullifying gender in this work? So, you know, I take on the divine feminine. What does it mean to be a sacred masculine, and how is that different? And so this is where I'm finding it all very confusing, Lisa.
Well, do you feel like you have to give up being a man to evolve in this open heart? Because I don't see it that way. I see that, you know, you have this personality and this side of yourself that you want to honor and you should honor. And yet at the same part, you have this heart that may have been closed for a long time. I'm not judging, but it may have been closed for a while where you're
maybe
kind of creeping it open and you're testing it. And that light's kind of starting to shine through. And sometimes that light comes through and it's a little scary because it's too much and you can't receive it all that well. So, you know, there has to be this time thing, you know, this pace, comfort.
I don't know. Maybe a man's heart is just different than a woman's heart. Many men, maybe that's the woman judgment. Many men live and do good things for people, but they don't show their heart in the same way, but they still show their heart. Maybe you ladies want us to be something we're just not, and you need to look deeper at how we exhibit our heart in our own way.
Mm-hmm. I agree to that, because there's many ways of showing an open heart. And I think that as you're allowing that to start to become comfortable, and again, it's an individual thing, because what one person's going to start to open up their heart to, another person may not resonate with that. They may open up differently. So there's no right or wrong way on how you open your heart. It's a matter of trusting your own feelings enough to do that, wouldn't you say?
Well,
kind of
again,
self-trust.
I come back to the question that what you call opening your heart may not be what I call opening my heart. And women don't have the limited license for what it means to be open-hearted. You know, I move in focus. I'm focused, and being too mushy doesn't serve me. But I'm getting better at making sure that what I'm doing with my focus is better and more helpful to the world. That feels very heart-centered to me without being mushy. And maybe that's the difference between us. As long as we're moving from the good heart, we don't have to manifest in the same way.
Right.
Because we're not the same.
Like,
what does it mean at the end of the day, once we get rid of what, you know, the perversions of polarity, when we get rid of that, what, isn't that it, perversions, he's perverted.
We'll go with that.
Yeah, so what are we left with that is the healthy masculine and the healthy feminine? How will we still be different in the good way? I want to know what you think about that.
Well,
I'd
I think you in regard to what have we got to, what have you as men got to learn by opening up your heart? Is that what the question is?
What does a healthy masculine look like, and how is he different from a healthy feminine in the emotionally healthy sense? I mean, are we going to end up being the same being?
I don't see that. I really like being a woman, and I'm glad I'm not a man. And I'm sure that as a man, you feel the same way about being a man. So I don't see that the genders are going to become so blurred that we don't know whether, you know, we're coming or going. I think what it is there's more of a softening of how we interact with one another in regard to not always coming from a place of I'm right and you're wrong, but more of kind of blurred lines of there is no right and wrong. This is just basically how things are, and you kind of flow with it. So there's, you know, there's a kind of an unspoken acceptance. There's kind of a an acceptance in a way that as you're not doing any harm or foul to the other person, you're accepting that they're going through their transition in whatever way they need to go through. So, but it takes a perspective on the other side to kind of be open to accept that, because not everyone's going to be, you know, on that unconditional wave and acceptance. They're going to still be in their old tapes and wanting things to be a certain way. And, you know, that whole Cinderella concept is a real, real dilemma and a real problem that comes in on a subconscious level in regard to many relationships. So even though women don't realize they're carrying that perfect knight in their head of what they think a man should be, they are. And I wouldn't say, again, all women, but many women do. And that has to be blown up. Because there is no perfection.
Yeah. No. Like, where does that nonsense come from? I mean, did men do that? Did we create that, do you think? You know, where did women get this idea that there was a perfect man, like a godlike man on this planet at this stage? It doesn't even make sense to me. How is it possible?
Well, it's kind of the ideal also with the Cinderella, because, I mean, Cinderella is presented as this incredible, untouchable female as well. So, I mean, there's this idealized fantasy that's gone on for, you know, too long that really kind of, you know, talk about perversion. That's the seed of perversion that's implanted in children's minds, and they grow up to be adults, and they're, you know, it's like thinking God's sitting on a white, fluffy cloud with a long white beard. You know, it's that whole childlike mentality that's never evolved from.
Right. Hold on a sec. Jeff wants to say something. Hi, Lisa.
Hey,
you know,
Jeff.
To me, it's about, yeah, you know, it's this enrealment thing for me. Like, it's almost as though that whole, like, setup, that whole enlightenment, that male paternalistic, like, you know, isolated, kind of like having this separate, profound, powerful experience of enlightenment, as opposed to enrealment, which is like crafting a vision of whole human that actually is living in all dimensions, including their fragmentation, including their emotional material, including their not yet perfect. You know, it's like, how do we create a reality so that what actually excites us is humanness instead of perfection, right? Because perfection projection is never going to work, and men have it too. You know, she's perfect, she's a goddess, she's whatever, and then, you know, we find out that, like, she snores and the whole thing falls apart. You know, it's like, how can perfection snore? It doesn't make any sense, right? And, you know, and this whole trip is really fucked up, because the truth of it is, what really should excite us and invite us and gives us kind of the fodder for conscious relationship is somebody's imperfections. You know, it's that those little cracks where the light shines through, right? I can't remember who I think it was, Grateful Dead. So, you know, and it's like that is the direction we have to move, so that we can meet one another in our humanness instead of meet one another in our godliness, because we're not there yet. We may never be supposed to be there, but we're not there yet. And then it changes everything. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you have a nasty side in the morning or whatever, suddenly it's like, oh, that's interesting. Let's delve into that. Let's see where that comes from. Let's see how we can work with that. And it creates the fodder for conscious relationship. The other way, there is no fodder for conscious relationship, because if you're not perfect, it's over, you know?
Right.
I mean, what a horrible setup that is.
And it's set up to screw you up. So you've got, you know, you have this, you know, again, it comes down to, you know, illusion, fantasy versus, you know, acceptance of reality, because you've got this going back and forth in the mind of what is real. And real is the moment of what you're living. And I do really appreciate the enrealment part of living and evolving and growing, because the enlightenment part is something that I really feel our true enlightenment comes when we die. So, you know, as far as being here now, we're here now experiencing life and evolving as we go through our humanness. So it's like we have to keep that whole appreciation for the nitty-gritty, the dark and the light, and the snoring, because it's all a piece.
Exactly. Yep.
You know, it's
all a piece.
It's all, and you've got this coming from, you know, you've got the divine feminine, where I really loved that you kind of were, you know, telling without telling that, look, this is how men are, and it has nothing to do with an attack on you. And in the sacred masculine, you do the same thing in regard to, look, this is women's fears, and this is why they react this way. So there's a lot to learn in regard to, you know, our fears and how we react and not taking it personally. And I think that piece of not taking it personally is a huge piece.
Yeah, but the only way to do that is to begin to contextualize human experience, to take it away from the individual, you know, not to disown the individual, but to incorporate in an inclusive way, and this is in realment, to bring it all into the play, and because it is all part of the dance, and to understand where these fundamental human fears and gripping security issues come from that completely impact on the way we relate to one another. You know, I mean, it just seems so bloody obvious that that's happening, and yet we don't talk about it. You know,
right.
It's like we're so tripped out on our localized stuff all the time and living in our patterns and living on our, you know, our unconscious tapes that we just, like, don't step back enough, detach from it just enough to understand we're moving from a framework. This is a framework of reality. This is consistent with where humans have been, you know. And if we're going to get and evolve to the next place, truly evolve to the next place, we got to live, you know, it's like living in the world as it is before we live in the world as it ought to be. And, you know, because there's so much in the spiritual bypass movement now around moving us away from acknowledging reality. And that's why when I post the status, it's really hardcore reality. People love it, because there's so much in spirituality that's soft-touching reality. And, you know, and maybe their vision of possibility, you know, is consistent with mine in terms of the ultimate way we ought to operate on the planet. But I don't think I agree really with, like, how we're going to get there, because I think we're only going
to
get there if we talk about what's really going on. And
yeah,
we talk
we
about
have to
where
be real.
It really comes from. We just, that's it. And it changes everything. And then we can move to the place where we can hold the personal, that is that I'm having a reaction to your pattern, you know, the way you're behaving or whatever, but then also trying to have some compassion and insight and awareness. So when we sit down at a table to dialogue in a conscious sense about the situation, instead of having a dialogue between baboons, basically, we have a dialogue between humans. So we're like holding the animal awareness of the emotional reactivity, but we're trying to penetrate, more deeply penetrate, and craft an understanding of where we are coming from. And it's, I think that's the next level of dialogue that has to happen between genders before we're going to get anywhere. Otherwise, we're just going to keep reacting, and we're going to react forever. You know, we've got to step out and add something else to the equation. Yep.
And there's no, you know, I think the basic thought too. One of the basic thoughts here is there is no right or wrong among the genders. You know, it's not that the women have all the answers. It's not that the men are all wrong. And yes, women may have more of an open heart naturally, but that's also, you know, you know, we also give birth, have babies. We come from that heart space on a biological level many times. So there is that open heart that's, you know, more prevalent among females naturally. You know, it's a different landscape for men. It's a different, you know, they have always been the provider or the rescuer or the savior or what, you know, the masculine dominant warrior. And I think if we have more compassion and just stop coming from a place of blame or right or wrong or, you know, accusations, the compassion, the empathy is the key. Because we're all searching, and it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman, you're searching in your own way. And we all want that little, you know, holy grail of peace and love and acceptance. And yet at the same point, many times we subconsciously do things that do the antithesis of that. So you've got a whole gamut of basically coming from the heart, coming from authenticity, coming from compassion and empathy. And that's going to have to be started with the females. I'm sorry to say, women, but it's going to have to come from us to kind of forge the way to show men that we are non-judgmental, that we are accepting, that we do have empathy for their struggles, and that it can't be an easy transition to come from a stoic stance to an open heart.
Right on. Right on. Let me read something from the apology, if I could. That's on
Please.
Point. Yeah. May we never forget the relational and co-transformative nature of human expansion. Although the ultimate romance is with your own soul, it's our experiences together that give birth to the essential lessons. We're each here to participate in this dance of sacred imagination, stepping on each other's toes and turning each other toward God one clumsy step after another. We trip, and then we get back up with greater awareness. With this in heart, I'm hopeful that we can learn to accept one another in our humanness. We are going to continue to make mistakes, but there's grace in that if we see our errors through to the lessons they contain. And to me, that's what it is. We're going to keep fucking up, and that's just the way it is. I mean, this is just birth school, but if we have an intention to continue to figure it out, you know, and to find our way to a more evolved and inclusive plateau together, not separately, but together, then I think we'll keep getting closer to the world as it ought to be, the world of divine imagining, you know. I think if we don't understand one another in those terms, that is that we are on this dance floor and mistakes are happening all the time that we're here to learn from, we're just going to keep hating one another. You know, because we're not seeing one another as humans, we're anticipating or expecting or hoping for perfection. It is just not realistic, you know. There are very few perfect dancers on this planet.
Right, right. And it's a matter of really understanding that it's not, you know, a personal thing. It's not a personal attack. It's not that you're not understood by the opposite gender because they don't choose to. It's because it's just this empty gap there that needs to be understood or communicated.
Yeah, two different species, as you adverted to earlier. We got to become one species. No, we do. In our awareness and our attunement to one another, we have got to become one species.
Right.
Because really, in many ways, it seems like we aren't, you know, in the way we've been operating with one another.
Yeah. Well, it hasn't been. And yet even to merge the two concepts or the two ideals together as a species or as an energy, it's still going to be a little uncomfortable because, you know, you're going to have, you know, there's a lot of men who aren't going to be naturally comfortable with all of a sudden revealing their heart and their vulnerability. And there's not going to be, you know, there's going to be women who have issues about keeping their heart open and opening their heart if they're not getting that reciprocation or their feel, you know, it has to come from an unconditional space is where it has to come from. You can't look, it can't be conditional. You can't give expecting something back. You have to give because that's what you have to do. That's what you want to do.
Right. Right. And
now,
Go ahead.
No.
I think we have to be realistic, just really realistic about how much change one individual can go through in one generation, or how much one generation can shift.
Right.
And, you know, I think this idea, you know, it's like there are certain habitual ways of being, you know, like that comforted some of us as children, for example, that are who we identify as self, that we don't want to stray so far from. You know, there are things we want to shed and there are things we want to hold on to. And some of those things that we hold on to may not be consistent with the vision of ultimate human possibility, but it's fine. We're just one generation in this human, you know, dance. And I think we have to continue to strive towards wholeness, but at the same time allow ourselves, grant ourselves permission to stay in patterns or habits that comfort us or that are fundamental to who we identify ourselves as, rather than deconstructing the whole thing in one generation and making ourselves crazy with not knowing who we are, you know? We have to have a self to come home to in this work. And I think quite often people on the path are trying to deconstruct everything, and it's too much to do that.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
You know, I like it when the racetrack channel is on while I'm writing. This would seem like an archaic and baboon-like thing, like this weird combination of the mundane, the sacred and the profane. So I haven't gotten the racetrack channel, you know, as a result, because I've been judging that. And now I've got the racetrack channel in the house, and I can't wait to write a book, a love story, with the racetrack channel on in the room. And it sounds insane, but actually that something about that grounds and comforts me. It was one of the only things that gave me pleasure as a kid. And why do I have to lose that? Because I have to become this perfectly evolved being all the time. You know, I think we have to just be realistic about where we're coming from.
Right. We can't give up, you know, things that bring us pleasure if it's not doing any harm to, you know, anyone or anything else. And that's something that also needs to be, you know, accepted and have that openness of that compassion. I really see that the generation coming up now, like the younger guys in their 20s who are raised with women who have more of an evolved approach or different paradigm to parenting than maybe their parents did, actually have a better grasp than maybe our generation because they are seeing things from a woman's perspective. And I know even in my own home of two children, two boys and myself, I see how their, you know, appreciation for women or me or my role or what I do is different than, say, my brother's, because it's a completely different open heart that's being taught as mothers are raising sons today. And and I do think that, you know, unfortunately, it does come. It has to start with the female. You know, what comes first, the chicken or the egg? Well, the open heart has to be ushered in with the open heart of the woman on an unconditional level. That's just my opinion, but that's how I see it.
Right, but that's you're harder on women than I am. See, I hear that, and my reaction is, well, why do they have to do it all? You know, my reaction is they've been trying to do it forever, and it hasn't worked. You know, my reaction is, you know, question or inquiry is what role do we have to play as men, and you know, in that dialogue and in that crafting, you know, and I don't want to put all the heat on women to have to teach us boys how to move from our hearts. There's so many sociological factors at play.
But it's not teaching. It's
modeling.
It's learning by example. It's learning by, you know, it's not coming down and saying, look, you screwed up here, you need to do this, open your heart there. It's more of a point of coming from an authentic, unconditional space, naturally, not trying to do anything, but just coming from that space and that energy kind of, you know, reverberating, generating outward, that is going to be received naturally. And it has to come from that unconditional heart. It just has to. And I'm not saying that it's all women, but, you know, women have to do this. But I think that it's going to be easier if women can do it and start the process where men can kind of, you know, at their own will and their own pace, jump on board.
Yeah. Well, there's no question that the more compassion and open-hearted and willing to look below the patterns that women are with men, the more inviting that'll be for men. But having said that, I had a lot of incredibly heartfelt, lovely girlfriends. And if I wasn't in a space to open in that way, it made no difference what they modeled to me. It made no difference
right.
how they met me. It wasn't. It, in fact, if anything, it was actually a turnoff at times because it felt threatening to my vigilant warrior nature. So I feel as though whatever changes are going to make, we're going to make them together. We're going to have to walk in step, and that means that my brothers are going to have to do some work, and that means we're all going to have to do some work to make the world a safer place so that
mm-hmm.
men will simply feel safer to drop their arms and come from their hearts. And that is my primary image of the male patterning, is that until this, you ladies can be as loving and kind as you want, but if that planet is not safe yet, if rule of law has not prevailed, if democratic solutions haven't overcome fascist environments, if all of that isn't safe and comforting and humane and all the rest of it, the boys are not going to live from an open heart. They're going to stay in the vigilant warrior focus. And that's why all the changes that are happening on the activist level and on the humanistic level in the systems of the world, in the legal systems, fighting against tyranny, all that stuff, are so connected to our dialogue, I think. You know,
I agree.
Work has to be done on every level, every single level.
And we're off the air, Jeff. That was awesome.
Right on. Okay. they boot us off?
They booted us off?
That's very nice. That rude lady at the beginning that says 2 more minutes. They don't even give us that at the end.
You didn't hear that? I was getting 10 seconds, and you were in the midst of something. I had no heart to cut you off.
That's okay. That's perfect.
That was great. Thank you. Good.
Yeah, we got going in the second half, I thought, a lot better. We found a little bit of our rhythm. So,
yeah,
fantastic.
Well,
and I got to go. I got to take a shower, and I got to go. I got sales appointments all afternoon.
Hey, have a great day. Good talking to you.
Thanks
again for being on the show.
Thanks.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Thanks. Bye.